Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, your host for today. Over the weekend, one Juneau neighborhood was asked to evacuate due to the threat of an avalanche, and that problem is not going to go away. And joining us to talk about that, Tom Matisse, who is with the City and Borough of Juneau. He's their emergency programs manager. And Kanan Bosler, who is with the Southeast Alaska Avalanche Center, which is just 1 year old. And we'll get an update on that, I hope, as to how that's going. But Tom, let's start with you. Can you give us an update on what the status of the threat is currently?
Well, the danger level is still at high. We have a persistent weak glare in the region that's been a problem for some time and will continue to be a problem. So this threat may linger for the rest of the season. It's really going to go storm to storm. Every time we get big load on it, every time we see big warming, big rain or snow events, it's going to bring it into question again. So we're going to have to keep our eye on it for some time.
So it's sort of this yo-yo pattern of wet, cold, rain, freezing, snow. What kind of weather do we have for a certain period of time for the mountain to stabilize?
It's going to take some spring warming. It's going to take some gentle warming with maybe some rain, but nothing extreme or fast. The layer needs to get to a near freezing state and have some time to heal. And it really got locked in during that cold period that we had. And it has been getting worse for some time. I think it's starting to heal a little bit now. But we've definitely seen weakness all over the producing avalanche that are far greater than normal size.
So what should we be looking out for as we keep having these changes in the weather? I mean, when is the danger the greatest? Like, what kind of a snow do we have or freezing that should send up a red flag immediately?
Well, ideally, we'd like to keep the precipitation rates down. When we see more than an inch of rain a day, we start getting a little more nervous. If it happens during cooling, that's probably a little better thing than if it happens during a warm period, especially if it happens during a warm period where it actually starts raining up at elevation. If we see rain on snow to summit with an inch plus of rain, that's probably not going to be a good day. And then anytime you add wind to that, you change the equation as to where the avalanches may be more prominent and how deep they are, and also add to the significant weakness.
So I want to go to Kanan Bosler because he's been out in the backcountry. In fact, I think you were out today, weren't you, when we talked by phone earlier?
Yeah, that's right. I just got back to the house just in time. Luckily, it was just in the backyard, but I was poking around in the snow up on the Gastineau Ridge line up by the Mount Roberts Tram, and monitoring the layers that we've been watching this season.
Can you describe what you saw?
Yeah, well, we've definitely got a ton of new snow from this past week. It was having to dig quite a lot to get down to the layers that we're concerned about. So that's primarily why we're so concerned, is that we have these really weak layers on top of a very firm bed surface. The bed surface formed on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I don't know if people remember, it was a very warm and wet day. We got rain to the top of most mountains. So we've got a very solid bed surface, and since then have gotten some very light snowfall events that got capped by a freezing rain crust. And then that was followed by almost 2 weeks of very cold, clear weather, which just made that loose snow even looser, growing these weak facet crystals within the snowpack. And by having that freezing rain crust on the surface, it created a layer that can transport energy throughout the snowpack very easily. And now, after this past week of just nonstop snowfall, that layer is getting very deep, and we were pretty concerned this weekend when it started warming up and loading those layers with some heavy, dense, warmer snow.
So, Tom, at what point did you make a decision to evacuate the Barron neighborhood?
Well, as we went through that storm cycle, we had a clear day where we finally got a chance to look around the region. The AAL&P forecasters noted huge avalanches all over Douglas Island and to the south. I had summited the Dan Moeller area on snowmobile and noted avalanches that were nearly a mile wide that were running full length. We looked at the forecast for the next day. We saw warming to summit with 34 plus degree temperatures on Ridgeline, and we saw as much as 2 inches of moisture, and just really concerned with putting those bricks on top of those weak layers that are out there already.
So how do you sort of trigger avalanches? I know that that's done in some parts of the Juneau area, and how does that help?
Kanan, I'll let you talk about that.
Yeah, so with ALMP and DOT, we have these devices called the Daisy Bell, which I'm sure a lot of people have seen if they've ever gone to watch the Thane Road control work. So it's a hydrogen gas exploder that dangles from the bottom of the helicopter on a long line, and it mixes hydrogen gas and oxygen gas in a little chamber and then gives a little spark, and the helicopter pilot is able to hover over the snow, usually gets, you know, within 5 meters of the surface of the snow, and then he'll have an operator on board that will be filling the tanks and can, you know, basically very precisely trigger that explosion right where it needs to be. And so we'll go along and try to trigger small avalanches in spots that are likely to propagate to deeper areas. We're looking for thin spots in the snowpack that have the same layering that can then propagate out into deeper areas. And so if we do that throughout the season, we can create lots of small avalanches rather that will trigger out those weak layers and make the stuff slide in the areas that we're most concerned about, rather than letting it build up all season into a really big, deep avalanche that will go naturally.
A lot of the avalanches start from the shallower spots. And oftentimes when these really big storm cycles, we're not able to fly right away. And so I think that sometimes when we get a deeper instability, the tool may not be perfect for the job, but we do the best they can and they run great programs. It's just that avalanche, once the layers get buried really deep, they become harder to trigger, and it takes, and sometimes they go and sometimes they don't. But every time we add new load, we add more rain, we add more snow, it makes it that much closer to being sensitive to naturals and starting on their own. So the avalanche programs, they do a great job of mitigating the danger. You can see that DOT's brought stuff down to the road behind the berm several times this year. So it's just great to see that they're doing a great job.
So what about avalanche control close to downtown? I imagine that you can't do the same type of thing.
You know, when we hired the Swiss in 2011 to do the Juneau urban mitigation study, we were hoping that they would come back and say, you know, if you build fences like this and diversions like that, we would be okay with you coming in and doing avalanche control. And unfortunately, what they came back with and said is, well, look, Alaska, we don't have the ability to force mandatory evacuations. I can't make people leave their houses. And if there's any structures below it, we don't do avalanche mitigation. It's just too much risk.
So what can be done? I mean, pretty much, are you telling the people of Juneau that are nestled into those hills near downtown that there's nothing that they can do other than to keep an eye on things and get out of the way?
I think that's really a great part of it. You know, Juneau has a tremendous number of homes in hazard areas, from mudslides to avalanches to glacier outburst floods. So we have a multitude of hazards, and people need to be aware of those hazards, and people need to have a plan in place as to how they're going to deal with those situations when they arise.
Well, I understand that you were going door to door in the Barron neighborhood, letting people know that the risk was at a level that they needed to leave. How did that go?
It went really good. Everybody gave good feedback. It was nice talking to all the neighbors. You know, when I'm the one that takes the responsibility for pushing the button, I want people to have their questions answered. But I also want people to be safe and hopefully have the best information to make those decisions. And in the process, we actually documented what every house looked like. We documented who lived in those houses. We documented whether they were going to be there or not, so that if we did have a search and rescue event, we would know places that were 100% vacant and we could focus our efforts. So there was a little hidden agenda in there, but we definitely want to communicate with our public and help them make educated decisions throughout this unique season.
Well, there was sheltering set up at Centennial Hall. Did you have many people take advantage of that?
Just a few folks came to the shelter. Most people had plans in place already, going to friends' houses, going out the road, going in their RVs. But we did have a few folks at Centennial Hall. We're fortunate to have the great support services of the Red Cross to help with that evacuation center, and they did a great job.
Well, let's talk about the risk in the backcountry, because I'm sure that all of this snow is so tempting to people that they may want to push the edge a little bit. Kanan, you know, what are you seeing? And also, we should point out that you have a network of observers out there that actually post pictures online so they can see. But what are you most worried about?
What we're most worried about this year is, I guess, what some might consider maritime complacency. We live in a maritime snowpack climate because we're, you know, so influenced by being at sea level. So a lot of times we have, you know, we can have some pretty significant weaknesses within the snowpack that form throughout the season that people have seen, you know, throughout the years skiing here. But this year it just seems to be a little bit different of a setup with the nature of the faceted weak layer that we have in that freezing rain crust. It seems to be preserving that weak layer much longer than what we see normally. So this is what we call a persistent weak layer, and it is becoming a deep persistent weak layer, which is even more dangerous. So it's tricky, you know, trying to get the point across that it's not the type of instability that we see normally here, where if you give it a couple days, it'll improve. Right now we're not sure if we're going to be seeing this layer, you know, pop its head up in April. Even like, it's going to take a long time for this to heal, and especially depending on which paths have already slid out and which ones haven't, there's a chance that this layer could surprise us. And you know, maybe we think that it's gone away and haven't seen much from it, you know, for a few weeks maybe, and then someone might trigger a thin spot that then propagates deep to an avalanche that'll be, you know, like a 15-foot crown, and that's unsurvivable. So it's a very tenuous situation with having this layer in the snowpack that is it's a lurking dragon, and it can pop its head up and bite at unexpected times. So I guess the main point we want to get across is just to kind of keep your terrain choices conservative throughout the rest of the season, because you never really know when this thing is going to spring up on you.
I was just going to say, you know, Kanan's group through the Coastal Alaska Avalanche Center, they have, that's the observer network you're talking about. People can go to coastalakavalanche.org and they can read recent observations from other people and see those pictures, but they can also share their own observations. And they're doing a great job of building this center, and it's a really good asset to the public. So the more information we can get shared out there, the better.
That is pretty impressive to see all those different pictures that people post. And I like the one photograph that's on your website that shows the different layers, you know, marked in paint with squares and diamonds to show the different types of snow that are underneath in the pack. Are these people volunteers that contribute these images and reports?
Yeah, the Coastal Alaska Avalanche Center, we just started it up this last year, and it's a completely volunteer organization. We have contributors on there that have professional status, people that have you know, worked in the avalanche field or have taken a professional avalanche course. They'll be labeled as professional observers, so that way you can kind of have some context for some of the observations that you see. But otherwise, no one is paid for this avalanche center, and we're all just doing it to fill a void that we've seen in the Juneau community for a long time of just having somewhere that everyone can go to see observations that everyone else is seeing. So now that we have this format, this database webpage, you can go and post something that you've seen and let everyone in town know about it so that we're all well aware of these weaknesses in the snowpack. And it couldn't have come at a better time, because this season in particular is one that we want to make sure that we're sharing as much information as we can with everyone out there.
And he mentioned the nature of these avalanches in the backcountry. They're so unique. Some of them have been triggered from a quarter to a half a mile away, from a flat spot down in a basin all the way to a mountaintop ridge, propagating hundreds of yards wide and several feet deep. So you could walk up to a ridgeline and trigger an avalanche that killed somebody a mile away, and you didn't even recognize that you did it. So it's just a really unique situation in the backcountry right now.
I guess we're learning a lot, you know, not to jump ahead to the future, but with all that precipitation, all that moisture, what kind of dangers will we see in the spring when all this stuff starts to melt? Floods, mudslides, possibly sort of a Haines scenario possible?
You know, you just never know how the spring will go. There's a lot to be said for each storm cycle. Hopefully, when we see warming, we see low rain volumes and vice versa. But, you know, the deep weak layer that we've been watching, as where it was, you know, only 110 centimeters deep the day I requested evacuations, it's 177 centimeters deep today. So the concern is growing. Although the danger level is down a little bit today, the size of the avalanches is truly catastrophic. I was heading up Dan Moore Cabin Trail yesterday to do some snow pit assessments, and there had been two avalanches that had crossed the Dan Moore Trail, large enough to break trees at 15 to 18 inches in diameter. And that happened on the day that we had requested evacuation. So this is on the order of a 30 plus year avalanche. Should that occur in the Barrens Path, we've got some significant issues. But that's why we're so on edge, and we want people to be making informed decisions and doing the right thing.
Well, I'm glad that people are cooperating and doing their best to stay safe. Thank you so much, Tom Matisse and Kanan Bosler, bringing us up to date on the avalanche situation.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks
glad
for having
to have
us.
The opportunity to share all of our observations here.